Hello and welcome to the Library Cafe, a weekly program of table talk about research and the formation and circulation of knowledge. I'm Thomas Hill. I'm delighted to have back on the program today the Philip and Lynn Strauss Curator of Prints and Drawings at the Francis Lehman Loeb Art Center here at Vassar College, Patricia Fagan. We're going to be talking about the exhibition entitled Fluid Expressions, The Prints of Helen Frankenthaler, on view from the collections of Jordan D. Schnitzer and his family foundation through December 10th. Welcome, Patty.
Thank you. Thanks for having me back.
You're my most frequent guest, I think.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, yes. Over the top.
Well, thank you. Well, that's a compliment.
So can you tell us how this exhibition came about? I know it came from the Amon Carter Center in Fort Worth.
Right, yeah, the show did come directly from there. It was organized by the Schnitzer Family Foundation mm-hmm. out in Portland, and with a great deal of work being done there at the Amon Carter Museum of Art. And we found out about the show actually through the Jordan Schnitzer Family Foundation website, which actually offers these great exhibitions of contemporary American artists.
Mm-hmm. Tell me about Jordan Schnitzer then and the foundation.
Okay. Jordan Schnitzer is a contemporary art collector. Mm-hmm. He's also a real estate person. He grew up in Portland, Oregon, mm-hmm. and he has, I believe, over 10,000 American contemporary prints. Mm-hmm. He began collecting in the 1980s. His mother was a gallery dealer there in Portland, Oregon, and he loves Pacific Northwest artists, and he began, you know, collecting more internationally well-known artists in the 1980s. Mm-hmm. So he has works by Frankenthaler, Stella, Sarah, just numerous mm-hmm. works by very well-known artists.
Mm-hmm. So the show was at the Amon Carter Center, and it was available, so you decided it might be a nice fit for Vassar. And then, so the question is, do you have a special affinity for Frankenthaler? I mean, was it the artist in part that drew you to want to bring this exhibition to Poughkeepsie?
Well, I thought that the combination of Frankenthaler's frankly beautiful mm-hmm. prints yeah. plus the rigor of her intellect mm-hmm. would be a great match uh-huh. for Vassar.
Uh-huh.
Certainly the number of compliments mm-hmm. you know, that we've gotten on the show uh-huh. has, I think, proven that correct.
Okay.
So that was a good kind of leap, mm-hmm. you know, yeah. to go forward.
Yeah.
But we really did think that her work was terrific for Vassar because of the intellectual content and because she's such a very well-known artist. When I found out that the show was available, I really just kind of jumped at
uh-huh,
it.
Uh-huh. So visually, it's a stunning show. Print shows are often, you know, shades of gray, but this isn't at all, is it? And your shows tend to be colorful, the ones that, where even your the in-house curator, no, not the originator.
Right.
I remember your Japanese show was very, very colorful, and then the Augsburg show also was very colorful. So yeah.
Right, but just going back, lovely shades of gray.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes, yeah, sure, I would say, yeah.
Yes.
Let's make for not often colorful exhibitions, and this one is very,
right.
very colorful, of course.
Right.
So, yeah.
Well, certainly she was so very well known for her fields of mm-hmm. color,
yeah.
and these, of course, take that up as well.
Mm-hmm.
That's central to her aesthetic.
Yeah, and there are a lot of female artists in the Loeb collection itself, aren't there? I mean, it's
yes,
something that we've
are.
always cultivated. So
mm-hmm.
thinking back, Linda Nochle just passed away.
That's right.
Yeah, so. Most people, then, you know Helen Frankenthaler as a painter and a color field painter and a leading member, then, of the color field movement that included abstract expressionist painters like Barnett Newman and Mark Rothko. But not everyone's aware that she's a highly influential printmaker as well as a painter who worked in various printmaking techniques and pushed the boundaries of almost every technique that she tried in very innovative ways. So I suppose my question is part of the rationale for this exhibit to show people that side of Frankenthaler's work, which tends to get overlooked because most people know her as an abstract expressionist painter, right? So,
right. Yeah. Well, she was such a force in the 1970s, especially with her color woodcuts. Mm-hmm. She really revived the color woodcut, mm-hmm. not since German Expressionism, really, in the 1900s, 10s, and 20s. Mm-hmm. Do you have really such force, you know, such bold color woodcuts? And so she really did force through those boundaries, mm-hmm. with the color woodcut. And I thought it would be terrific for audiences here to see those, but also to see a well-rounded presentation, mm-hmm. of her prints, mm-hmm. from the 60s up to the 2000s. Uh-huh. And so there are so many works and so many different things that she was working through during that long period.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. So do you have the show arranged in a specific way? I mean, you have three bays usually, and often there's a logic to what's in what bay.
Yes, with the three different bays. The very first one is the earliest works, uh-huh. from the 1960s and 1970s, where she is really concentrating on color fields, mm-hmm. and veils of ink, mm-hmm. just really beautiful work. Mm-hmm. In the 1980s and 90s, she really dealt with gesture a great deal. Mm-hmm. She was kind of going back to the 1950s in that respect. And that is the second gallery, the very middle gallery. Mm-hmm. And then the third gallery is devoted to the work from the 2000s. Uh-huh. And so those works are really characterized, most of those works are characterized by a greater complexity. Mm-hmm. This is where the color woodcuts are, yeah. from the 2000s. Yeah.
So can you tell us about Helen Frankenthaler? How did she get started? Where did she train? That kind of thing.
Of course, she was born in New York City, mm-hmm. to a wealthy family. Her father was a judge. Mm-hmm. She went to the Dalton School, where her art teacher was Rufino Tamayo.
Ah.
And then she went to Bennington, where Paul Feeley was her professor, her art professor. Mm-hmm. Then she graduated from Bennington in 1949, mm-hmm. and met Clement Greenberg, mm-hmm. in 1950, and they started a 5-year relationship. Mm-hmm. But from, like, when she graduated for 2 or 3 years, mm-hmm. she was experimenting a great deal and learning a great deal about Picasso and Braque, mm-hmm. about Kandinsky, about Gorky, about Jackson Pollock, mm-hmm. and how those artists, how they painted and how they manipulated space, mm-hmm. the pictorial space. So she was very much into learning about cubist space, uh-huh. and about there being these different spatial depths just within one work, mm-hmm. like Picasso and Braque.
Oh, interesting. Bennington must have been an interesting place back in those days because it produced a lot of interesting people, didn't it? It must have been a really hotbed of
right.
abstract art.
Yeah. Right.
So then how did she find her way to the New York School to become a prominent member of the New York School herself, a little bit later than some, but still, you know, she had her feet firmly planted in that world,
right.
she?
Well, she and Clement Greenberg went to Nova Scotia, uh-huh. in 1952, and while she was there, she made a lot of landscape studies, mm-hmm. you know, kind of traditional landscape studies. And so when she came back, she began working in a very different manner, mm-hmm. that was inspired by Jackson Pollock's pour paintings, mm-hmm. where he poured paint,
yes.
onto the flat, mm-hmm. unprimed canvas. Mm-hmm. And so what she did was to create this wonderful unprimed canvas where she poured oil paint that was really diluted, mm-hmm. like watercolor washes, uh-huh. diluted with turpentine. Mm-hmm. And so the paint sank into the canvas. It didn't lay on top.
Yeah,
and so that soak stain technique, mm-hmm. and that's what she called it, was her really big breakthrough and really did push new boundaries for painting. Mm-hmm. And it opened the way for color field painters uh-huh. like Morris Lewis and uh-huh. Kenneth Nolan uh-huh. yeah. and contemporary artists too, who were very much fascinated and engaged with the process mm-hmm. of pouring, painting, yeah. not just seeing something as an end result, mm-hmm. but really going with the flow of the materials.
Yeah.
So all of that was very important in the 60s, mm-hmm. for instance, yeah. you know, 60s and 70s.
Yeah. So she painted right on the floor like Pollock, right?
Right, she, yes. Yeah, she did.
Large canvases.
Large canvases.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, interesting. So that kind of work takes a sizable studio, doesn't it?
Right.
So she must have been able to afford a sizable
yes,
space to work in.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, the black and white pictures, oh, and also the color pictures, mm-hmm, of course,
yeah.
of those days, do show sizable studios.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah.
So she would have known and talked a lot, probably, with a lot of major abstract expressionist painters like Pollock, I mean, apart from Greenberg.
Right. Well, it happened that Greenberg did introduce her to Jackson Pollock mm-hmm. and the whole circle,
yeah.
you know, of abstract expressionists,
yeah.
and she was very much in tune with their painting and also their conversations,
mm-hmm.
you know, their intellectual
yeah.
conversations as well, and so she really was a part of that world.
Yeah, interesting. Was she married to Motherwell at one time?
She married Motherwell uh-huh. in 1958,
uh-huh.
I believe. Yeah,
oh,
1958.
Yeah. So the opening for this exhibition in early October featured a curator from the Albright Knox Museum in Buffalo, Douglas Dreispoon, whom with you and his mother and Emily
right.
Warren. I had dinner
right.
with afterwards. But
yeah, that was nice.
Dreispoon is assembling a catalog raisonné of her work, yes?
He is working on a catalog raisonné of her paintings and drawings, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, okay.
But he works in two places.
Mm-hmm.
He's the curator, I think it's called Senior Curator Emeritus or,
mm-hmm.
or something very similar at the Albright Knox mm-hmm. Art Gallery up mm-hmm. in Buffalo. And then the next week, I mean, he goes back and
mm-hmm.
forth, actually.
Uh-huh.
He also works at the Helen Frankenthaler Foundation
uh-huh.
in New York as
yeah.
well.
And he's a Poughkeepsie native, so. Yeah.
He is a Poughkeepsie yeah. native, and he is head of the Catalog Raisonné Project.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So even as a painter then, obviously, Frankenthaler liked to take risks and experiment with technique, right? A silk stain, as you mentioned, and you start the exhibition off with one of her paintings, actually. Is it one from our collection?
Right, yes.
A silk stain painting. Yeah.
Right, yes. This is a painting from the 1950s,
uh-huh.
so the crucial decade. And our painting is called Orange Painting,
mm-hmm.
and yes, we thought it would be a great idea to have that in the exhibition, particularly toward the beginning of the show,
mm-hmm.
so people could see actually what soak stain means.
Mm-hmm.
So,
painting, yeah, sure.
In painting,
yeah.
yeah.
So what drew her from painting into printmaking, which is a leap not every painter will make necessarily?
Right. Well, she apparently, from what I have read, she was hesitant to go into printmaking
uh-huh.
because she considered it old-fashioned,
mm-hmm.
particularly when abstract expressionism had to do with being spontaneous.
Yeah.
You know, being instinctual.
Mm-hmm. And it's the lonely artist with the abstract expressionist, isn't it? It's not
yes.
not a workshop. It's not
right.
a workshop sort of thing.
Right,
yeah.
right.
Yeah.
But she was pulled into prints through Tatiana Grossman,
uh-huh.
who is a Russian immigrant who started Universal Limited
mm-hmm.
Art Editions at West Islip in New
yeah.
York and Long Island.
Uh-huh.
And she apparently made everyone feel at home
mm-hmm.
at her Long Island house and was very gregarious. She had started ULAE in the late 50s.
Mm-hmm.
She started off with an artist book, an illustrated book
mm-hmm.
with lithographs by, Larry Rivers
uh-huh.
with poems by Frank O'Hara.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And then the reputation of ULAE and what all that print studio was about went word of mouth. Mm-hmm. And so you had Jasper Johns coming, and you had lots mm-hmm. of different artists, Robert Rauschenberg, uh-huh. you know, coming to do prints. And so Tatiana Grossman invited her in 1960, and so she completed her first print there, which was a lithograph, in 1961. And so she was hesitant at first, but then she worked very closely. She collaborated with the printers mm-hmm. who were there, just, you know, ready to do anything uh-huh. for her to make things the way that she wanted to yeah. have them.
Yeah, printmaking isn't something you can ordinarily do on your own, is it? A modern-day printmaking, it requires
right.
people, technicians, essentially, to help
right.
In the process. Yeah. So.
Right. Well, I mean, if you do an etching, it takes an etching press, a lithograph,
yeah.
a lithography press, and printers who know how to work with acids and grease and, you know, lots of different things.
Uh-huh. So this was a great time for printmaking in the United States, wasn't it? I mean, this was a time when printmaking really kind of blossomed, just as she was entering into doing prints.
Right.
So, yeah.
Yes, this was the start of what has been called the American Printmaking Renaissance
uh-huh.
with ULAE, Tatiana
yeah.
Grossman, you know, heading that up, and also June Wayne heading up Tamarin Institute,
uh-huh.
and, you know, it's just several print studios across the country, and, you know, the whole fine art print studio system just really blossomed,
uh-huh.
and so she started doing works with others down the road. But this really was the 1960s and 70s. You had Warhol, you know, you had
yeah.
pop art. You had so many artists making print portfolios
yeah.
together.
Warhol is very much interested, I mean, very much influenced by this kind of blossoming of the
very
sort of print
much
medium,
so.
Isn't it? With
yeah,
the factory.
Oh,
factory
central.
Is a studio, really, isn't it? I mean, a print studio. So.
Right, yes.
Yeah.
yeah, no, printmaking was central, you know,
yeah.
to his aesthetic.
Yeah. So she's very innovative, certainly in painting with her
yes.
soak stain. So the question is, do aspects of her soak stain technique spill over, to use a loaded term, into her printmaking?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she did use different techniques.
Mm-hmm.
She was very interested in process, and so she was interested in fields and veils, say, veils of greasy ink, so
mm-hmm.
the pouring of touche, which is lithographic ink, onto a stone,
mm-hmm.
and how the stream of the ink, you know, would go this way and that way. And so she was very much into these accidents and, you know, chances, and just kind of going with what was going on, and,
mm-hmm.
you know, perhaps altering it,
uh-huh.
you know, along the way.
Yeah.
Yeah. So as she was interested in chance and spontaneity,
mm-hmm.
you know, in painting, she was also interested in process and chance,
mm-hmm.
also with her printmaking.
Uh-huh.
And I'm sure she explained that in talking with Tatiana Grossman and all the other printers, that they knew that, and so that they could just kind of be there, you know, with her and explaining how the different processes worked.
Yeah, interesting. Sort of a paradox here almost. On the one hand, her work is highly technical and very carefully controlled. Her prints are obviously. But on the other hand, they come off as being highly intuitive and spontaneous. And does this have to do with the fact then that she's experimenting with process, and the process has a certain amount of spontaneity built into it? Because this is a technical medium, but on the other hand, she's an abstract expressionist painter, you know, so. But.
Right, she was. She was very interested in the process. I'm sure learned from the printers exactly how she could treat the printmaking process, whereby she would be kind of in charge of how things developed.
Uh-huh. So she was connected to the work right to the end,
yeah,
yes. through the process. She didn't just design the print and then walk away and then look at the product without a lot of trial and error, even. Right,
right. Yeah. No, she engaged in a large number of trial proofs,
mm-hmm.
and she mixed her own colors,
uh-huh.
and she took lots of notes on these trial proofs and would say things like, try this.
Mm-hmm.
or I'm trying to get it this way, you know. And so she would go through 20 trial proofs, you know, on something. So she was very much into experimenting, and she was engaged in numerous, you know, decisions about colors, and she mixed the colors, and she poured touche, and she went with the flow.
So how does she choose her subject matter, you know, because early on her main study there of the ocean, obviously it's a landscape, but it's an abstract landscape.
Well, she made abstract landscapes in the 1950s, and then she began just making these, I mean, you really can't say landscape because your mind brings up the land. And so it becomes more like a picturescape where lines and colors and shapes form this pictorial wonderland, you know, right there on this like flat sheet of paper. So there is this life that is going on, this activity that's going on between all of these different things that are happening there in this picture space. And so she really did not want people to think, oh, this is a figure or this is a landscape. Because she was really kind of against that. But I find that she was really attuned to like drawing with color, drawing with line, color and line being extremely important, and this kind of cubist space where you have different spatial depths also important.
So let's talk about some of the techniques she worked in, the graphic techniques, and maybe talk about some examples in the show. She starts out with lithography.
She did start out with lithography in 1961, and she created a print called First Stone, I believe was the name of it. So that was her first stone, so it's very literal. And so there you have some gestural marks that she's making, and the print was done in just a few colors. The earliest print that we have in the exhibition is from 1968, and that's an aquatint. And so that's where you use this powdery resin and you sprinkle that onto the plate, and you know, you warm up the plate and then you put acid on the plate to create this tone. And she also used sugar lift aquatint too. But she made prints in a lot of different mediums, as I say, the lithograph and the woodcut, you know. She combined etching, you know, with lots of different kinds of mediums. So she did woodcut and lithography and etching, aquatint, screen prints. She also did pochoir, which is a very early form of the screen print.
So screen print, you mean silk screen?
Yes, silk screen. For a long time now, the screens have not been made out of
silk.
They're made out of synthetic.
And then you mentioned she worked in woodcut and color woodcut, and she's very innovative with her woodcuts, isn't she?
Yes, she was very innovative with her woodcuts. She began that revival of color woodcut in the 70s. And by the 2000s, she was doing these very complicated woodcuts that were made in the Japanese woodblock tradition. And so we have three of those in the show. The most complicated one and the most beautiful one and the largest one is Madame Butterfly, which is an astounding print. It's just a beautiful tour de force of printmaking.
Some of the woodcuts, the grain of the wood is very prominent, and she uses sometimes different kinds of wood in the same woodcut.
Well, with this print, Madame Butterfly, Ken Tyler's studio, not too far away from here actually, they fabricated the paper that looks like wood, and so that is handmade paper that she printed that print on, and so it is meant to look like wood and probably look like, you know, the same wood that she made her like guide drawings on.
And then you mentioned she mixes techniques. And is that what, on the labels of some of the works,
right.
the medium is mixographia. Is that a separate type of technique?
That is a proprietary technique for which we don't know all the little gritty details.
It's a secret recipe. So.
Yes, it is like a copyrighted, secret recipe. But from what I can gather, it is a relief process mm-hmm. where, in this instance, she used wax mm-hmm. and she squirted that onto a maquette from which a copper printing plate was created, and then the etching process mm-hmm. then took place after that.
Yeah.
But that is for the print called Tahiti, and it's just a beautiful print. And that's the print that I wanted to put on the tidal wall.
Uh-huh.
It's so beautiful.
Yeah. And then she uses traditional media also, including, you have some etchings in the show and some dry points also.
Well, she does use those, but mm-hmm. she combines them
yeah.
with aquatint,
uh-huh.
say.
Yeah,
she's very much into combining the different printmaking mediums.
Hmm. So do you have any favorite pieces in the show? Madame Butterfly and Tahiti probably up there. But
I think that would be Madame
Butterfly. Uh-huh,
yeah, exactly. It's just sumptuously colored and beautiful, bold, but delicate mm-hmm. and very elegant.
Madame Butterfly looks a bit like a Japanese screen,
yes,
doesn't it?
Yes, that is in three parts. She had been inspired back in, I believe, the 70s by a show at the National Gallery of Art
uh-huh.
of Japanese screens.
Oh, uh-huh.
Right.
Interesting. So, if we want to talk about any more works in particular.
The print, Green Likes Mauve,
uh-huh.
is a pochoir. That's an early form of screen print where you use stencils.
Uh-huh.
But what she did was to use a sponge
uh-huh.
and dip the sponge in acrylic paint
uh-huh.
and wipe the paint across the sheet of paper. But she also had this stencil that she used too to create this green stripe going across. And the green and the mauve together is just a beautiful combination.
Green does like mauve.
Green does like mauve.
Probably, mauve probably likes green back.
I think so. Absolutely.
So her print runs, they aren't in great numbers, are they? I mean, she doesn't print
right.
out hundreds and hundreds
of
prints,
right.
does she?
They're
short runs, aren't
right.
they?
Right, well, 30, 50, smaller runs.
Yeah. You mentioned the Helen Frankenthaler Foundation in New York. Is there an archive there?
Certainly, and I believe that they are processing all those things right now. Her papers.
Oh, I see. Well, she just passed away how long ago? It wasn't long ago, was it?
I believe it was 2011.
Yeah.
Well, in fact, museum members will be invited
uh-huh.
to come down to the archive for a special evening on December the 5th.
Oh, uh-huh.
Yeah, at 6 o'clock, where the director of the foundation, Elizabeth Smith,
uh-huh.
will speak.
Oh, great.
And also, the director of the collections there, she will also speak, and she actually was Helen Frankenthaler's assistant for
uh-huh.
25 years.
Uh-huh. So when you say members of the museum, you mean...
The members of the Art Center.
Yes.
Right.
That who get invitations to things, that kind of thing.
Right,
and
exactly.
Does that include students? Can students be members?
Yeah. Students can be members,
yes. Uh-huh.
absolutely,
yeah.
uh-huh. yes. And we want students as members.
So apart from the trip to the Frankenthaler Foundation, do you have other events scheduled in conjunction with the exhibit?
Yes, I'll be giving a gallery talk
uh-huh.
on November the 16th
uh-huh.
at 4.
Great.
Right.
So, and is that Thursday or
November
16th?
Look.
Okay.
Let's see. Let's look in the calendar. That is Thursday.
Oh, that's
yes.
a Thursday. Okay.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. And just to mention, with the Frankenthaler Foundation, if people want to find out more about Helen Frankenthaler, they can find out about her from the foundation on their website at www.frankenthalerfoundation.org. A nice website they have. So, okay, last thing I'll ask. This show comes down on December 10th, and do you have anything planned for next year? I mean, what will your next exhibit be?
Yes, we'll be having an exhibition of Photographs, Prints, and Films by Andy Warhol. That starts on January the 26th.
I didn't know about this at all. This is great.
So, this is good.
Hopefully it'll draw a nice crowd.
Warhol usually does.
Yes, yeah. Okay, so I'd like to thank you again, Patty, for visiting with us on the Library Cafe, or allowing me to come to your office and talk to you about the Frankenthaler show.
You're very well.
So we've been talking with Patricia Fagan, Philip and Lynn Strauss Curator of Prints and Drawings here at the Francis Lehman Loeb Art Center at Vassar College, about the exhibition Fluid Expressions, The Prints of Helen Frankenthaler, on view from the collections of the Jordan D. Schnitzer and Family Foundation through this December 10th. Thank you, Patty.
Oh, you're very welcome. Thank you.